Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1974 with a release date of Friday, August 28, 2015, follows in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. The following is a QST. Amateur radio comes through in two far-reaching emergencies, wildfires in Washington State and in a Great Britain air tragedy. The FCC cracks down on an Ohio ham charged with malicious interference. Tennessee amateurs get ready for their annual CUSO party, and a science museum in India honors ham radio's heyday in the city of Bangalore. All this and more in Amateur Radio Newsline Report number 1974 coming your way right now.
From around the world, this is Newsline, Amateur Radio's first independent on-the-air news and bulletin service. Now reporting from Mississippi, here is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
We begin with breaking news out of Washington State, where the largest wildfires in the state's history have left three dead, consumed more than a half million acres, and destroyed at least 200 homes. The fires surrounding the central Washington town of Twisp, where three firefighters died, were considered among the hardest to contain. Amateur Radio Newsline's Kent Peterson, KC0DGY, spoke with two hams in the town of Twisp, Dave Corrigan, KB7SVP, and Police Chief Paul Boudreau, KG7PTU, about how a collective of relatively new hams in the police department, working with hams in the community, has allowed residents to help one another by keeping those all-important channels of communications open.
We are in a valley surrounded by the mountain ranges. We have three ways into the valley, and two of them have been blocked off. Within my agency, the town of Twisp, we had the fire coming to us. We had to evacuate.
That's Paul Boudreau, KG7PTU, the police chief of Twisp, Washington. Dave Corrigan, KB7SVP in the neighboring town of Winthrop, explained what ham radio nets they put into place. They've had fires in the past to learn from.
We've been working on having some type of internal plan for the club that when power goes off, if we're not activated or anything like that, or things happen so fast like this, or an extended power outages, where we would be able to have something to go off of. And we just said something simple was, hey, if something's going on and no one's called a net, we'll plan on having nets every 3 hours, 9 a.m., noon, 3 p.m., 6 p.m., 9 p.m., just like Wilderness Protocol. Top of those hours, monitor, get the information, share what's going on.
The rapidly moving fire last week claimed three firefighters.
We had three fatalities, firefighters who, from the initial attack, got blown over when the wind shifted way before anybody would have expected it, and much faster than they expected.
Is the fire area now under control?
Most of it's under control. There's one lead edge, probably about 3 miles long, that they're trying to button up. But the rest of it around is stable, and they just keep an eye on it.
What prompted you to become a ham radio operator?
I was with a tribal agency for 8 years. Within the tribes here in Washington State, we're very big into the emergency management, and ham became one of the go-to backup systems for communication. And then when I got over here to Twisp, got very interested in it again.
During the fire, the big problem for both towns was loss of electrical power, and as a result, loss of cellular telephone communications.
AT&T failed on us. Verizon went down for a little while, but it's still up, sporadic at times. Communication, when it goes big.
When the residents didn't know the progress of the fire, the hams relied on others to keep them informed.
We had KE7TNG and KG7JSW. They live across about 5 miles away from us. They can look over our shoulder and see what's going on behind us. We couldn't because there's a hill up close. And vice versa, last year, telling them, well, how close things are getting, they couldn't see. So even eyes on ground like that, watching each other's back, that was going on this time. Really talking to Paul out there, see what's going on, and standing by, and that came in really handy.
From the standpoint of knowing you have a group of ham radio operators on the other end of a radio, what reassurance does that bring you?
Having that knowledge that I have somebody out there watching my back when I need it is, you can't ask for anything better. It's just golden.
If you could advise other public safety officials about the value of ham radio, what would that be?
I would tell them to find a local ham club, go and talk to them, start getting interested in it, start out learning how the system works. The reason why I made my guys go to ham is so that they would have the gear in their cars, they would learn to use it, enjoy it as a civilian, and then when we need it, they're already up on speed. They're not trying to learn how to run a ham radio.
Advice from Twisp, Washington Police Chief Paul Boudreau, KG7PTU, who, along with Dave Corrigan, KB7SVP, shared some of their ham radio experiences when a huge wildfire threatened their towns. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kent Peterson, KC0DGY.
Chief Budrow noted that the town's police department is now entirely made up of licensed ham radio operators. In another example of radio amateurs performing critical services under daunting and dangerous circumstances, a team of British hams stepped in to help restore order and assure public safety after an air show demonstration turned deadly. 14 were injured and as many as 11 died, perhaps more, according to news reports, after a Hawker Hunter aircraft, during a demonstration for thousands of spectators on Saturday, August 22nd, crashed into cars traveling on a busy road near the Shoreham Airport grounds. The South Sussex Raynet Group joined with members of the South Kent Raynet to assist emergency services, directing people and equipment where needed. The Raynets are part of their respective county's Radio Amateur Emergency Network. At the time of the crash, they had already been on site providing communication support to the event's organizers. Ohio radio amateur Daniel R. Hicks, KB8UYZ, is being charged by the FCC with malicious interference with other radio operators' communications and failure to properly identify, subject to a combined fine of $8,000. The agency said that beginning last year, the Cincinnati ham's actions disrupted activity primarily on a number of VHF repeaters. The FCC's Enforcement Bureau issued a notice of apparent liability for forfeiture on August 20th, citing complaints dating to April 2014. Tom Delaney, W8WTD, speaking on behalf of the Greater Cincinnati Local Interference Committee, said the interference was initially described as a nuisance but later escalated into racist and obscene remarks. The Enforcement Bureau's initial investigations did not succeed in locating the source of the transmissions, but according to the FCC, ongoing disruptions prompted a return visit some months later and verified Hicks' address as the source. The NAL document said the agent heard several recorded messages for about 90 minutes, with the station identifying itself with another licensee's call sign. Delaney said the short transmission sent across several repeaters used what he called a sophisticated synthesized voice. The proposed fine is $7,000 for malicious interference with an additional $1,000 for failure to identify properly. Hams are hitting the road in Boston to assist with two important public events for the benefit of that city's Dana-Farber Cancer Institute. The first event, the Jimmy Fund Marathon Walk, steps off Sunday, September 27th. The all-day trek along the 26-mile route follows the same path as the Boston Marathon, with hams providing administrative communications as well as emergency communications for medical tents and the sweep vehicles deployed to them. Hams are needed to operate on 2 meters and 440. To participate, send an email to Bob at WA1IDA@ARRL.net. And just a few weeks later, on Sunday, October 11th, the Boston Athletic Association's annual half marathon, which also raises funds for the Cancer Institute's Jimmy Fund, will set out along the Emerald Necklace in Boston. Amateur radio volunteers are needed to provide communications at medical and water stations until early afternoon. Registration can be done on the Athletic Association's website. For questions, contact the ham radio team's captain, Brett Smith, of the Boston Amateur Radio Club, AB1RL, at ab1rl@brettcsmith.org. Time for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W4WVP repeater of the Arlington Amateur Radio Club of Arlington, Virginia. Registration for the International Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend can be described in one word: shining. Organizers say the numbers topped 500 this year. A total of 506 registrants from 32 countries took part in the annual event August 15th and 16th, and the greatest participation was seen in England, Australia, and Germany. Other nations showing increased growth in participants included Canada, Cuba, Bulgaria, France, Portugal, and Scotland. In the United States alone, there were 70 lighthouses and lightships registered for the event. 13 sites were registered from Cuba, which has been normalizing its relations with the United States. Although the numbers were good, organizers said that 2014 was still the best year when 544 entrants signed up to operate. The next Lighthouse and Lightship Weekend will be held August 20th and 21st, 2016. The event is off to a good start. It already has 30 registrations. Tennessee is ready to get this party started, and on September 6th and 7th, all antennas around the world will be rotated in the direction of that state, or so the hams there have been hoping. The Tennessee CUSO Party, organized by the Tennessee Contest Group, operates in CW, phone, and digital modes, as well as VHF and UHF. And yes, there will be party favors. The contest group awards plaques and certificates for different categories, as well as magazine subscriptions and even radio kits. For more information, visit the CUSO Party's website, tnqp.org. India's world-class science museum, the Visvesvaraya Varaya Industrial and Technological Museum in Bangalore, is marking its 50th year with special exhibits, one of which pays tribute to ham radio's popularity in that city. In addition to new displays of a meter gauge, steam locomotive engine, and Nobel Prize milestones, The museum devotes space to the history of amateur radio in India. The museum has had a radio station on the premises since the 1970s, when licensed amateurs were a rapidly growing community in the region, and many hopeful hams took classes and then their licensing exams at the museum. The display includes transmitters and other equipment that is now considered hard to come by. Museum curator Madan Gopal tells the Bangalore Mirror the acquisition of those radios was quite a feat for its time. Quoting, "Back then, even to import an international magazine on science took at least 3 months, and we had to seek several clearances from the government. You can only imagine how hard it was to import a transistor." End of quote. The museum, part of India's Ministry of Culture, draws 1 million visitors annually. Elsewhere in India, hams from the South India Amateur Radio Society were marking a historic first. Hams from the South India Amateur Radio Society gathered August 22nd and 23rd for a homebrewers meetup and field day at the YMCA camp in Yellagiri, not far from the capital city of Chennai. The focus was on home brewing, but activities eventually moved into a night of chasing DX, using some of the ham's own homebrew antennas. There was also a bit of elmering with the help of Dev Rama Prabhu, VU2DEV, from Bangalore. Two homebrew projects were in the spotlight. O.M. Prabin, VU3MJF from Bangalore, shared the creation of his transmitter, and another ham from Bangalore, O.M. Sudhiri Rajur's VU3PWT, spoke about the automation systems he designed and built. Of course, the gathering wasn't complete without at least one more important project befitting the occasion, a good strong cup of tea. Homebrew, of course. With this month already gone, the ARRL is already looking towards next August, specifically to spark new interest in its August UHF contest. The ARRL's ad hoc subcommittee on VHF and above revitalization is asking the amateur community to suggest ways to boost involvement in the annual late summer competition, and they want input no later than October 1st. The committee is seeking details about ham's involvement on the UHF-VHF bands and thoughts on how to increase participation in the contest. Submit ideas, suggestions, or other comments via email to vhf-input@arrl.org. Election season is in high gear in the ARRL's Northwestern Division, where both the current director and vice director face challengers. James Pace, K7CEX, presently the director from Centralia, Washington, is being challenged by William Balzerini, KL7BB of Auburn. Meanwhile, vice director Bonnie Altus, AB7ZQ of Sheridan, is facing rival Delvin Bunton, N7QMT from Vancouver, Washington. The election is for the term running from 2016 to 2018. Ballots will go in the mail October 1st to all division members in good standing as of September 10th. Only paper ballots will be used. Winners will be announced on November 20th. All other remaining division office holders were unchallenged and have been declared re-elected. Time again for you to identify your station. We are the Amateur Radio Newsline, heard on bulletin stations around the world, including the W7TA repeater of the Sierra Nevada Radio Society, high atop the Grand Sierra Resort Hotel and Casino in Reno, Nevada. Hungarian radio amateurs can now apply for permits to operate in the band from 5350 to 5450 kilohertz on a secondary basis. The National Media and Info Communications Authority, Hungary's telecommunications register, is granting the three-month permits largely for propagation research with support from the Hungarian National Amateur Radio Society. The temporary permits, which are renewable, permit power of as much as 100 watts with a maximum bandwidth of 3 kilohertz. Although the permits are issued by the telecommunications register, hams apply through the Amateur Radio Society, which is coordinating the details. The band already has a CW beacon at 5357 kHz using the call HA7SO. NDX Pedro ON7WP has been operating as C5WP in Buntu, Gambia, where he's working with the private charity group Smile Gambia, supporting a small remote village in the central part of the nation. He's focusing on the work bands, but will also be active on 6. He's hoping for 40 and 80 meters as well, but he concludes his operation September 1st, QSL directly to his home address in Belgium. David F0CRS and Freddie F5IRO will be in French Guiana for the next 4 months, active on the HF band CW and PSK. Both operators can be sent QSL cards via F5KIN. The Manx Kippers will be on the air from the Isle of Man on 80 through 10 meters during SSB Field Day September 3rd and 4th using the call sign GD0EMG/P. If time permits, they'll try to be active on 30 meters as well. Send cards to M0BEW. The Amateur Radio Club at the Royal Institute of Technology in Stockholm is marking its 50th anniversary and using a special call sign for the event. They'll take part in the Scandinavian Activity Contest on SSB from September 24th to 25th using the call sign SA50L. QSL should be sent via SK0BU. Alan Rovner, K7AR, is heading to Rarotonga Island. That's IOTA OC013, where he'll be on the air from September 24th to the 29th as E51AAR. He'll be on 80 meters through 10 meters, participating in the CQ Worldwide RTTY contest September 26th and 27th. Send QSLs via his home call sign, K7AR, Logbook of the World, or the online QSL request system. And K2HVN returns to Iceland and is operating as TF/K2HVN between August 31st and September 7th, holiday style. He'll be on 30 through 10 meters using CW and SSB. Send QSL cards via his home call sign. He's not accepting Logbook of the World or EQSLs. And finally this week, as this newscast goes to air, Hurricane Katrina was coming ashore in Buras, Louisiana, and later on the Louisiana-Mississippi border exactly 10 years ago. It was a storm that claimed, by some estimates, at least 2,000 lives and forever changed the shape of life for tens of thousands more, including me. We lived in Chalmette, Louisiana, about a 10-minute drive from the New Orleans Superdome in 2005. I evacuated my family to Little Rock, Arkansas for what we thought would just be a long, unscheduled weekend trip like so many other storms before. 2 weeks later, we departed for our then-weekend home in Picayune, Mississippi, 50 miles northeast of New Orleans. That's been our home for the last 10 years. While in Little Rock, Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, asked me to file a report. He said, just say what you want. So I picked up a microphone, and I just started talking. No script, no editing, just my thoughts while the flooding in New Orleans was unfolding. There was no cell service, only this newfangled thing called texting. Finding satellite maps online was tedious at best, but I had a Yaesu FT-817 that I had bought just the week before at the Huntsville Hamfest, and that little FT-817 allowed me to get on the local repeaters and, more importantly, listen to what was happening back in New Orleans and the Mississippi Gulf Coast. Here's that report.
I'm sitting in a hotel room in the Travelodge in North Little Rock, Arkansas, after running from Hurricane Katrina. Our first stop was, for the first night, a hotel in Memphis, Tennessee, and it looked like that the hurricane might still be rather strong as far north as Memphis, we decided to head west. So here we are in our second or third day in North Little Rock, second, I think. That all kind of blends together after a while. All appearances show that our home in Chalmette, Louisiana, which is in St. Bernard Parish, if you've been watching the news, is gone. Early estimates were that 40,000 homes in St. Bernard Parish were underwater, and now that the additional levee breaks in New Orleans have flooded that city, it appears that everything is gone. But you know what? That's fine. It doesn't matter because my family's here. My wife and son are with me, and her family, her mom and dad, both of her brothers, their families, our niece and nephew, and a whole bunch of other assorted in-laws are here. And that's the important thing. As long as you have your family, then you still have everything. All the rest is just stuff and can be rebuilt or replaced or relocated away from. So that part I'm not worried about. It's the human tragedy and the things that I'm seeing on the news, even from all the way up here in Arkansas, that distresses me terribly, the looting that's going on, just the human tragedy. 20,000 people in the Superdome and having parts of the roof come off of that building. And now that I understand that there's water on the field in the Superdome, at least from some of the reports that I'm getting, and now 20,000 people are being evacuated from the Superdome. The generators have failed in Tulane and the University Hospital in New Orleans. They understand that there's diesel fuel down the street, but the problem is, how do you get the diesel fuel from down the street? That's what they're trying to figure out. The levee breach on the 17th Street Canal that leads from Lake Pontchartrain into the city, that drainage canal, is 200 to 300 feet wide, and they have to wait for the water pressure to go down before they can fill it, because everything they put in there, these you know, just many, many ton sandbags are just being washed away. So New Orleans thought that it dodged a bullet, but apparently now we see that it hasn't because of the levee break. So anyway, like I said, in the end, it's all just stuff, and those of us who have survived can rebuild. Sorry, this is a bit rambling. I usually operate from a script, and I'm not today. I'm just sitting here by myself in the hotel room. My son and Dawn are down by the pool or visiting their family or whatever, so it's just me and the dogs, one of whom you can probably hear coughing in the background. So, anyway, with that said, just let everyone know that we're safe. We're good, and will survive. Keep us in your prayers, and not just us. I don't mean us as in the Wilbanks AE5DW family. I mean everyone who's affected by this, everyone down on the coast in Louisiana and Mississippi and Alabama. There are a lot of people hurting, and we need your prayers, and we need your support. And with that, I say thank you very much. From Little Rock, Arkansas, this is Don Wilbanks, AE5DW.
I don't mind telling you, it's a little bit surreal listening to that again after 10 years. It's something I don't want to go through again. So in closing, I'd just like to thank all the ham radio operators, first responders, and everyone around the country and around the world who put their lives on hold and traveled down to the Gulf Coast to help with the rescue and the rebuilding. It was a team from Canada that made it to my house way before the local folks got there. And to the great people and radio amateurs of North Little Rock, Arkansas, thank you. I'll never forget how you made my family feel welcome. And with thanks to Allen Labs, the ARRL, the Bangalore Mirror, the Boston Amateur Radio Club, CQ Magazine, CNN, DX Coffee, DX World, Hap Holly and the Rain Report, LIDS, the Ohio Penn DX Newsletter, Southgate Amateur News, Twit TV, QRZ Now, and you are listeners. That's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline. Our email address is newsline@arnewsline.org. More information is available at Amateur Radio Newsline's only official website. You can find that at www.arnewsline.org. You can also write to us or support us at Amateur Radio Newsline, 28197 Robin Avenue, Santa Clarita, California, 91350. For now, with Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team worldwide, I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW in New Orleans, saying 73. And as always, we thank you for listening. Amateur Radio Newsline is copyright 2015. All rights are reserved.